Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. Another very special episode as we continue to follow up on the hurricane response. Specifically in this episode, we're going to be talking about what's going on with Irma and the southeastern U.S. and Florida and, of course, the Caribbean islands as well. And we have our two deployed responders from the show here on the show. We've got my co-host, Sam Bradley, on. Hey, Sam.
Hey there, Jamie. And Joe.
And Joe's here as well, Dr. Joe Holly from Paragon Medical Education Group. And, of course, with the incident support team, the IST, for the response. And, Joe, how are you doing?
Doing well. How are you guys today?
Well, I'm high and dry up here in Maryland, but I know things are at least it's sunny and clear down there now, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Very different situation than we had in Harvey there for many, many days. It's actually beautiful blue skies today and starting to warm up again and be typical Florida weather.
Well, you're south of me, Joe. We got some rain still going on here. I'm about somewhere halfway between Jamie and you down there, so it's still kind of wet here.
So I know we got you guys on here on, this is Tuesday afternoon, the 12th of September, so we can give people a frame of reference of what we're talking about and when, but we wanted to kind of touch base with both of you and give you an opportunity. And first thing I want to do is kind of kudos to you, Joe. I know you and your fellow IST members actually were called upon for a more standard rescue when cardiac arrest happened in your hotel. What happened with that?
Yeah, it was actually quite unusual. We've been utilizing some convention space that's unused in a hotel as our base of operations. And there's been a fair number of local folks who have been sheltering in this hotel, which is without power for, you know, a day and a half or so. And so the apparently one of the elderly tenants of the hotel had a collapse and ultimately a cardiac arrest. And they, of course, called 911, which was a rather extended response due to the conditions at the time. And one of the hotel folks ran next door to find us and ask us if we could come and respond. So myself and one other, the incident support team docs and a couple of the medics ran over there with our gear and managed to successfully resuscitate the lady and kind of get her turned in the right direction about the time that EMS arrived. And so we transitioned her over and we followed up yesterday with her actually, and she's in the hospital in serious but stable condition. So we I think happened to be in the right place at the right time, especially in a situation where the standard response was somewhat delayed due to the condition.
Joe, you had some local fire guys with you, didn't you? Because they were staying there because their station was flooded out. So it sounds like it was a good interoperable response.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Sam. In that same space, we had some of the local fire guys from a nearby fire department, as well as some law enforcement folks who also were sort of sheltering in there, and they sort of all came along with us. So it was a multi-jurisdictional response in sort of every sense of that word, from the feds to the locals to law enforcement and the EMS and every jurisdiction in between. So it was quite the response.
Well, that's an important part of what we do, and I'm sure FEMA was pleased with the outcome.
Well, I think it's an opportunity to just, you know, showcase that there are responders, extra responders in the area, and that you just so happen to be in the right place at the right time. But that's so often why we bring extra responders in for these types of things, because there is an extended response time for a variety of reasons.
Well, and it shows that life goes on and other things still happen besides disaster-related things. And especially, I was thinking after Joe told me this, that probably the stress of everything she was going through might have been a factor in her medical condition.
Well, I certainly won't disagree with you, and you're right. I think that's one of the things about disasters that we haven't spent a lot of time talking about, and that is that, you know, the regular life goes on, and real day-to-day emergencies still occur, despite the fact that they're occurring in the scale of a larger situation. So, you know, it's interesting to float back and forth between those two worlds, from the real austere environment of disaster medicine to the more traditional EMS response that a lot of folks do every day.
I couldn't agree more. Plus, there's a lot of evacuees where we are that came north, and we've been talking to some of them. Just all of their separate situations. There's a family of four up here from Hilton Head, and this guy, you know, just watch him watch the news and, you know, trying to figure out what's going on at home. And then, you know, large families with little kids. We invited a man to sit down with us at breakfast this morning who is a Vietnam vet, walking with a cane and trying to walk his two poodles outside. And then he told me they took a spill off a curb yesterday, and, you know, walking's kind of hard for him. And then there was this gal who was 9.5 months pregnant, you know, ready to deliver this week. And I didn't find out where she was from, but obviously she wasn't home. So you think about all of these things that making life even more complicated for people, be it age or pregnancy or, you know, having a family displaced. It's, you know, your heart goes out to them.
I agree. And that's something we probably should touch on, is that one of the reasons, like I said earlier.
Have you talked to many of the evacuees, Joe? Have you had a chance to interact with them?
Yeah, we have had a chance to interact with a fair number of folks. You know, it's currently we're doing some work in the Keys where there's still a pretty significant amount of damage to homes, you know, and structures. And surprisingly enough, despite all that, an awful lot of folks who are out and about and, you know, busy cleaning up and who managed to survive the storm. Part of that, though, is just, you know, our desire to get through those areas and make certain that despite the fact that some of those houses are collapsed, et cetera, that there's no one there or no one who's been out of touch. Communications are still rather sketchy there, of course. And so that's part of our goal, is to just get through there and make certain that all those areas have been searched and no one's been left behind there.
You know,
so how many search missions are going on?
Go ahead, Sam.
Sorry, Jamie. I was just wondering how many search missions are still going on down there.
I'm not sure I can give you a specific number. I know we've got about 5 teams active there now. You know, there's quite a few folks out in the field. We actually flew a task force in to a fairly remote area of the Keys today to sort of work that end a little bit in an effort to move things along fairly quickly. It seems that a fair amount of the, I was going to say infrastructure, I'm not sure that's really the right word, but things like hospitals and EMS systems and all that are beginning to come back online today down there. And so, you know, folks had evacuated and are beginning to return and trying to get services back in place. So, you know, it's a pretty impressive number of folks that are currently engaged in those active searches down there now.
Yeah, I know. I was watching.
Well, at least
I was watching the news and saw, you know, evidence that a USAR team had been through. I saw the, you know, traditional spray paint on the door with the signals of, you know, who'd been there when and what they discovered inside. In fact, I knew sort of what it meant to interpret it, but I didn't know for sure. So I actually found a link and posted it on our web Facebook group for anybody that's over there to and so they can interpret it, those signs when they see them. But it seems like there are USAR teams deployed down there and making good headway based upon what I'm seeing on the news, and that's good. Does it look like Florida's really starting to take back what they need to do to get their own responders in place? And you said, I guess, some things are coming back online, Joe?
Yeah, I'm seeing a very robust response from Florida. There are an awful lot of state-controlled assets in play. As a matter of fact, when I was listening to what you just said about spray painting symbols on the doors, FEMA doesn't do that. So those are all non-FEMA search teams that are doing that. Most of those are probably state-level teams that are either based here in Florida or have been loaned to Florida on emergency medical assistance compact agreements between states. So, you know, what that says to me is that many of those teams are engaged, and sort of the big stuff that we tend to handle at this level, which is the larger buildings and the more difficult situations and that kind of stuff, really is thankfully somewhat less frequent. And that essentially is, you know, allowing us to focus our resources on a smaller number of areas so we can get those things cleared and done, and helping the state to assume more control for their own destiny and their own response to this this disaster.
So, Sam, what are you seeing on your end of things? I know you can't talk about a whole lot because there's still some things up in the air and in flux. Yeah. But, you know, there are a lot of areas we don't realize, you know, with Harvey, things were really much more self-contained in a smaller area, whereas we have the entire southeastern U.S. impacted in one way or another, millions of people without power. And then we have all of the expanse of the Caribbean islands that were impacted as well, that are either under our U.S. territories or perhaps receiving some aid because they're allied territories. And so we're seeing a lot of that.
Yeah. And, you know, a question came up on the website because I'd mentioned, you know, we were kind of in a staging situation, and they said, oh, well, that's got to be kind of painful. But it's understandable because, A, they needed to get us through the airport before the storm hit up here. Otherwise, we may not have been able to get in. Same with the other teams in other states. So we have been staged for a couple days because obviously they have to wait for the storm to pass so they get a good sense of where they most need us. We're small teams of two. We do what we do, and they have to figure out where the best place is in terms of sending patients out and receiving patients in, and that always seems to be in a state of flux. So today we got a call from D.C. saying that there's discussion about that, and there's every possibility that some of us at least will be moving south. That could be the Keys, that could be Florida, that could be Puerto Rico. We don't have any real concept of that, but you know, that's kind of what's in the wind right now. And they're not sure who's going to go where. So again, like you said, but at least they're making plans. They're starting to figure all of that out. So I think tomorrow we'll probably be on the road somewhere. So today though, I mean, the nice thing about the program we use is it's internet based. So we can bring it up on any computer or on our iPads or whatever. And, you know, this is a program that's not terribly complicated, but it's like a lot of things, if you don't use it, you kind of forget about it. So for a couple hours this afternoon, those of us in all three different states were able to get on the training program and practice sending patients to each other and creating manifests and doing those kinds of things. So that was kind of neat. We actually had some fun with it. We're going to do some more tonight. So wherever we do end up going, we're going to be, you know, comfortable with the program and ready to rock when we start getting patients through.
Well, that's good. And you know, Joe, this is what we talk about. I mean, there's a reason we have people staged and kind of waiting, and to the outside public, it might look like they're standing around with nothing to do, but it's part of emergency response. We bring in more assets based upon what we think we might need, and then hold them just in case we need them before we send them back.
Well, that's exactly right, Jamie. And, you know, we certainly have some of our resources in staging as well. They are scattered all across the Southeast. And, you know, you'd much rather move them into place and have them close by if you need them, and, you know, have them do some training and exercises and that kind of stuff and send them home than you would have to need them and not have them in place. So that is a pretty standard part of good quality emergency planning and responsive training.
Yeah, we don't waste any time. This has been a great training opportunity, as was our deployment to Harvey. So even if we didn't do what we thought we were going to be doing, we were able to help create relationships with other federal agencies and explain to people what we do and do some of our own training. So like Joe said, we're not just sitting around in a hotel room watching the Weather Channel, although we do that quite a bit. But, we take advantage of the opportunities.
No, and it's important to prepare for the next event. I mean, because there will be another event, maybe not this year, but each of these situations provides an opportunity to see what works, what doesn't work, and to carry on with perfecting the system that is constantly being improved upon. Right, Joe?
No, you're absolutely right. I was just I was thinking as I was listening to Sam described the just-in-time computer training that she was doing. We've actually been utilizing a military-derived information and tracking system that has amazingly robust capabilities from, the ability to send live video streams and, chat and GPS location and tracking and, drop pins and be able to go back and follow them up and send messages. And, the capability is phenomenal of some of these tools. And part of what we're doing is working with our friends at DARPA and other places to take that technology and provide them some feedback on how it can be enhanced to better be utilized in these situations. And, show the military guys what kind of things we need and we use with it so that they can, one, include that in their own software, and secondly, develop some of those tools specifically for us to use. So it is indeed a great test bed for new technologies and new ideas.
And we have to remember, hurricane season is still upon us. It's not close to being over yet. And I would be curious, and I would be anxious to listen to Kyle, because he did mention, the conditions haven't changed that much out there. So, I mean, we're still ripe for, I think I heard there was another invest that they're watching out there. So we're not out of the woods on hurricane season. And with the conditions, I mean, anything can happen, as we're finding out.
Yeah, absolutely right. And there are some other things going on, and nothing pending in the next week or so, at least, if not longer. But, it is important to keep an eye out. We just recently passed the peak of the hurricane season, which means we're not out of the woods yet until the end of November. So there's still plenty of time to go and plenty of time where we might need to deploy assets again. So as you said, Joe, it's a great opportunity to practice, to try out new things and see what works and doesn't work, and create new partnerships like you talked about, Sam, as well.
Yeah, that's the part I really like. I mean, we did a lot of that in Houston with the local National Guard and, the Air Force, DOD. I mean, they're all partners in this. We don't, we're just a piece of it. Covering our part of it. But I think Joe's right. I think once we have a chance to compare things, we can make everybody's software systems work better. And, I know what information they're getting, and they know what information we're getting, and it's all for the common good.
And I think it would be remiss if I didn't point out that it is September 12th, the day after September 11th, when I think 16 years ago, both of you were preparing to or already deployed to your either Ground Zero for you, Sam, or the Pentagon for you, Joe. And any thoughts? I guess I'll go with you first, Joe. Any thoughts on thinking back? I'm sure this probably brought back some memories as you were thinking about the date and at the time you were deployed.
Well, you're exactly right, Jamie. We did take a few minutes this morning to have a quiet commemorative for that day, because many of the guys and gals I'm currently working with were also involved back in the day. And, it's been a bit of a reflective day for all of us. Yesterday was, anyway. And a realization that it's hard to believe it's been more than 15 years already. And, you know, here we are again at another scene of disaster doing what we do. So it was an interesting mix of emotions, I think, from you know, somber remembrance to a realization that, you know, things go on, and we have learned a lot since 15 years ago, and we've learned a lot since last year. So it's just marching forward.
Sam?
Yeah, very true. Well, ironically, the partner I'm working with was also there. So we kind of had that common bond, but we also had the common bond and not wanting to dwell on it. And discussed at the beginning of the day that there's just kind of no escaping it. If you watch TV or you're on social media, or, you know, it's just, Joe might feel differently about this, but sometimes you just feel like you're getting lambasted with all, and it brings memories up. It brings feelings up. And, you know, to some extent, I guess that's okay, but we just don't like being bombarded about it, especially like when we're trying to concentrate on what's going on here. So, you know, a lot of us just kind of take a low-key approach to it and work our way through the day. And it's just not something we can talk to anybody about. You had to have been there to really kind of understand what that was like. So, you know, we all think about the guys that died there and the firefighters as well as the civilians, and that will always make us sad. I wish there was something we could do to change that, but we can't. And like Joe, I can't believe it's been 16 years already. That's incredible. So here we are.
I'm just glad I haven't aged during that time.
You look pretty much the same. I saw some pictures posted of you, and I recognized you right away, Joe. So that's a good thing.
Well, that is a good thing.
Forever handsome.
Yeah, it's. I think, as you said, Joe, you know, here you are on another disaster response, and I think it points to the resiliency of the responders in general, and the system in general, and the fact that it's continued on. It's learned lessons from what worked and what didn't work, and it will continue on for the next disaster or next event that comes along. So I think it's a, you know, as you said, Sam, we want to remember, but we don't need to dwell on it necessarily. It's good to sometimes just look forward and continue improving and doing what we do. And so I just wanted to bring that up because I was thinking about both of you guys yesterday, and just wanted to remind our audience that you know, we're all in this together in some way, shape, or form, and there's a way for us all to have a common bond in our response efforts for our communities and for our country. Final thoughts, Joe, as we kind of wrap up this shorter episode here. Is there anything you think of as over the next few days that we might want to keep our eyes open for in the news or what's coming up?
Well, I think there's still some, areas that are we don't have full visibility on yet. We're certainly still working hard in the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. There's some areas that, we've truly not gotten to yet. Thankfully, they're fairly sparsely populated. So I don't anticipate anything major coming out of that, but there is work left to do before we're done here. And then obviously a tremendous amount of work left even after we're done, you know, with one of the nice things about what I do is, you know, we're here very early. We work very hard up front and our piece of the entire process is done in 2 or 3 weeks. And we transition out for others that come in behind us to begin putting things back together. So there's a long way to go, but I'm really pleased overall that Florida did not seem to take as bad a hit as it was originally predicted.
Sam, how about you?
Yeah, I hear what Joe's saying, and it almost just a little bit makes you feel guilty when you leave a disaster area and you know you have a safe, warm house to go home to, and these people don't, and it's going to be a long time before many of them do. But I also wanted to mention you posted a memory on Facebook, which happened to be Steve Kanarian's book. We did an interview with him some time ago, but on his Ground Zero experience, which really focused on the EMS people that nobody knew as much about as the firefighters. It's called the Downwind Walk, and just wanted to give him a shout out because I always think about him on September 11th. And, you know, if anyone wants to learn about that phase of it, that perspective, you can find his book on Amazon. So I just thought I'd show that shout out to him and maybe have people that are interested checking that book out. So
absolutely. And that's,
but other than that, I'll just,
yeah, that's the Downwind
ahead,
Walk,
Sammy.
and things are, it's a great book. I highly recommend it. It gives a perspective that's a little bit different than some of the other things I've seen out there, and people might enjoy reading that. You know, Joe, training's come up a couple of times when we've talked about what's been going on down there, and I just want to thank you again for, and you and Paragon Medical Education Group for your sponsorship of the Disaster Podcast in your other role there. And I know that training is really comes to the forefront when these types of situations come up, and it shows in the fact that things are bouncing back as quickly as they are, and people are making their way through these search and rescue operations quickly and efficiently and safely.
Well, I think you're right, Jamie, for sure. And, you know, I think for us, it's a training ground for us as well. And part of what we work very hard to do is to take our experiences, whether they're 15 years old or 5 weeks old, and roll those things into the education that we're providing, so that it's up to date and it's experience based and it's functional in the real world, which is really where it matters.
If folks want to talk about or look into how they can bring Paragon Medical Education Group into their system to do some specific customized training for their responders, where can they reach you?
Well, we'd certainly encourage folks to find us on the Disaster Podcast Facebook page or the disasterpodcast.com. But you can reach Paragon directly at paragonmedicaleducationgroup.com or search for us on Facebook under Paragon Medical Education Group.
Great. Sam, where can folks find you?
Well, in the usual social media places under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, certainly on the disasterpodcast.com website and on the Facebook page. And it's nice to see that we're getting some more activity over there. People are starting to ask some questions. So feel free, to the extent that we can share that information, we certainly will. And I just wanted to mention, too, that it's not just Joe and I. Jim Logan's out there doing stuff. We have our friend Kevin from Texas that's doing stuff within his world to help with the disaster. And I know that you're going to be talking to them soon. And of course, we have our meteorologist, Kyle, who's keeping us really nicely updated on the weather perspective. So this is a real team effort, and I appreciate everyone on our team.
Yeah, and we're going to, that next episode will be coming out. This episode will come out sometime on Tuesday the 12th, and then we're going to have another special episode out for you on the 14th as well with Kyle and Kevin and Sam, and we're going to bring BJ Schneider in to lend his perspective looking back at Katrina and what he's been seeing and compare some things there as well. So that'll be on the next episode here coming up on the 14th. I'm Jamie Davis. You can find me under the handle PodMedic in most local social media locations out there. So please friend or follow me. Always, you can find me over at disasterpodcast.com and over at our Facebook group, and just search for Disaster Podcast. Ask to join the group. We'll be happy to let you in and contribute to the community and discussion over there. And we always post our episodes and additional links and questions and commentary over there as well. So please check in, and you can talk directly to Joe and Sam and the rest of us over on that Facebook group as well. That's it. You know, Sam, you and Joe have seen a lot of things firsthand, and maybe a lot more coming up in the next few days or week or so. We just see a lot of things, but it all comes back to the same response principles that we talk about every week.
It is, and we can't talk enough about the preparedness aspects we've been preaching about all these years, and this is exactly the type scenario where you need it. And, you know, like Joe was saying, it's kind of an odd mix of real world and austere medicine, but, I mean, I don't think we've ever had a better example of austere medicine not being our everyday medicine.